Many years ago, there lived a strange and savage king. He had a wild imagination and a very strong will. He loved to have everything his way. Each day, he and himself talked together. Whatever they agreed upon was quickly done, for he was the king and all-powerful. Some people said the king's ideas were strange, but they said this softly, very softly, when no one was around. The king liked the idea of the public arena. In other countries, it was a place where men and beasts showed their courage by fighting each other. But this king used the arena in a different way, to reward the innocent and to punish the guilty. Here's how it worked. A man was accused of a crime. If the crime was important enough to interest the king, he posted a notice. All the citizens of the land were invited to attend the trial in the king's arena. When the day arrived, a large crowd would gather. First, the people took their seats. Then the king would appear, followed by his court. He sat high on his throne on one side of the arena. When the king gave a signal, the accused man would step out into the arena. Opposite the king were two doors. They were side by side and exactly alike. The prisoner would walk straight to these doors and open one of them. He could open either door he pleased. No one helped him decide. Behind one door was a hungry tiger. If he opened that door, the tiger leaped out. It tore the man to pieces. That was the punishment for his guilt. Then iron bells clanged and cries of sorrow were heard. The people bowed their heads and went slowly home. They were sad that anyone should have met such a terrible fate. But if the prisoner opened the other door, a lady stepped out. She was as perfect a match for him as could be found. The king would clap his hands. At this, a priest would appear and marry them at once. Then bells rang out and music played. The crowd shouted and cheered and threw flowers in the path of the innocent man as he led his bride to his home. It did not matter if the man already had a wife and family. It did not matter if he wanted to marry some other. For as the king liked to explain, that is of no importance. Nothing can interfere with my plan for rewarding the innocent and punishing the guilty. The king believed this method was just. Its fairness was clear. The accused man could open either door he pleased. The choice was his own. The lady or the tiger would simply carry out the fate he had chosen. The plan was popular with the people, too. They could never guess what they were going to see. Would it be a cruel killing or a wild wedding? No one knew. It happened that this savage king had a beautiful daughter. She was as high-spirited and as imaginative as her father. The king loved her above all others. But the princess did not always obey her father's wishes, especially in matters of the heart. She fell in love with a man, but her father did not approve of him. The man was a slave of the king. He was both handsome and brave, and though he was just a slave, the princess loved him dearly. Their love affair went on happily for many months, but when the king found out about it, the young man was thrown into jail. A date was set for his trial in the king's arena. Of course, this was an important case. The king and his people were greatly interested in it. Never before had a slave dared to love the daughter of a king. Men were sent to find the fiercest tiger in the country. Judges searched for the loveliest maiden in the land. If the youth were not torn to pieces, it was right that he have a fitting bride. Of course, everyone knew the slave was guilty. He admitted he loved the princess, but the king did not let this fact stand in his way. He enjoyed the justice of his arena too much. Besides, the slave would be murdered or married. In either case, he'd be out of the way. At last, the great day came. Never before had there been such a crowd. The people shoved and pushed. Some could not even get into the arena. They stood waiting for the news at the outside walls. Finally, the king and his court took their places. The signal was given. A door opened, and the slave entered the arena. What a sight he made, handsome and tall. No wonder the princess loved him. What a terrible thing for him to be there. The youth walked across the field. Then he stopped. He turned and bowed to the king. He was not thinking of the king, however. His eyes were fixed on the princess who sat beside her father. For weeks, the princess had thought of nothing else but this day. Finally, she had done what no one else before her had ever done. She had learned the secret of the doors. Gold, in her power as the king's daughter, had bought her the secret. But she knew more than which door hid the lady. She also knew the lady's face. She was one of the most beautiful women in the king's court. And the princess hated her. The princess had often seen the lady looking at her lover. She thought that he had even glanced back. Once she had seen them talking together. It might have been nothing, but who could tell? The lady was lovely, but she had dared to look at the princess's lover. And now she stood waiting for him behind that silent door. The prisoner's eyes were still fixed on the princess. He searched her pale face closely. Then he saw that she knew. She knew behind which door crouched the tiger, behind which stood the lady. He stared at her. And his eyes burned with the question, which? The princess knew he was asking. It was as plain to her as if he had shouted it out loud. But there was not a second to lose. The question must be answered in an instant. The princess raised her hand and made a motion to the right. No one but her lover saw her. Every eye was on the man in the arena. He turned. With a quick step, he walked across the arena. Every heart stopped beating. Every breath was held. Then, with a firm hand, he gripped the door on the right. He pulled it open. Now, the point of the story is this. Did the tiger come out of that door, or did the lady? The more we think about this question, the harder it is to answer. It means we must study the human heart. Think about it. She was a wild and savage princess. Her soul was burning with jealousy and hatred. She had lost her lover. Should another woman have him? How often she had imagined seeing the tiger leap out with its terrible fangs. She had seen its claws ripping wildly. Then she would cover her face with her hands and tremble. But then she also imagined him at the other door. She saw his look of delight as he smiled at the lady. She saw him rush to the woman she hated. She heard the glad shouts and the bells ringing wildly. She saw the priest marry the couple while she helplessly sat there. Then she bit her lips and she tore her hair. Would it not be better for him to die at once? And yet, that awful tiger, those screams, that blood. She had given her answer in an instant, but she had thought about it for many days. She had known she would be asked. She had decided what she would answer. Without a moment's delay, she had moved her hand to the right. The question I leave to you all is this. Which came out of the open door? The lady or the tiger? Once upon a time, there was a little lass who wanted nothing more than to touch the stars in the sky. On clear, moonless nights, she would lean out her bedroom window, gazing up at the thousand tiny lights scattered across the heavens, wondering what it would be like to hold one in her hand. One warm summer evening, a night when the Milky Way shined more brightly than ever before, she decided she couldn't stand it any longer. She just had to touch a star or two, no matter what. So she slipped out the window and started off by herself to see if she could reach them. She walked a far, far way, and then farther still, until she came to a mill wheel, creaking and grinding away. "Good evening," she said to the mill wheel. "I would like to play with the stars in the sky. Have you seen any near here?" "Ah, yes," groaned the old mill wheel. "Every night they shine in my face from the surface of this pond until I cannot sleep. Jump in, my lass, and you will find them." The little girl jumped into the pond and swam around until her arms were so tired she could swim no longer, but she could not find any stars. "Excuse me," she called to the old mill wheel, "but I don't believe there are any stars here after all." "Well, there certainly were before you jumped in and stirred the water up," the mill wheel called back. So she climbed out and dried herself off as best she could and set out again across the fields. After a while, she came to a little brook murmuring over its mossy stones. "Good evening, brooklet," she said politely. "I'm trying to reach the stars in the sky so I may play with them. Have you seen any near here?" "Ah, yes," whispered the brooklet. "They glint on my banks at night until I cannot sleep. Wade in, my lassie, and you will find them." So the little girl waded in and paddled around for a while and climbed all over the mossy rocks, but never once did she find a star. "Excuse me," she said as politely as she could, "but I just don't think there are any stars here." "What do you mean, no stars here?" the little brook babbled. "There are lots of stars here. I see them all the time. On some nights, they cover me from the edge of the woods all the way down to the old mill pond. I have more stars here than I know what to do with." And the brooklet babbled on and on until it even forgot the little girl was there, so she tiptoed away across the fields. After a while, she sat down to rest in a meadow, and it must have been a fairy meadow, because before she knew it, 100 little fairies came scampering out to dance on the grass. They were no taller than toadstools, but they were dressed in silver and gold. "Good evening, little folk," said the girl. "I'm trying to reach the stars in the sky. Have you seen any near here?" "Ah, yes," sang the fairies. "They glisten every night among the blades of the grass. Come and dance with us, little lass, and you will find as many stars as you like." So the child danced and danced. She whirled around and around in a ring with the little folk, but though the grass gleamed beneath her feet, she never spied a single star. Finally, she could dance no longer, and she plopped down inside the ring of fairies. "I've tried and I've tried, but I can't seem to reach the stars down here," she cried. "If you don't help me, I'll never find any to play with." The fairies all whispered together. Finally, one of them crept up and took her by the hand and said, "If you're really determined, you must go forward. Keep going forward, and mind you, take the right road. Ask 4 feet to carry you to no feet at all, and then tell no feet at all to carry you to the stairs without steps. And if you climb that, then I'll be among the stars in the sky," cried the lassie. "If you won't be there, then you'll be somewhere else, won't you?" laughed the fairy, and he vanished with all the rest. So the little girl set out again with a light heart, and by she came to a saddled horse tied to a tree. "Good evening," she said. "I'm trying to reach the stars in the sky, and I've come so far my bones are aching. Will you give me a ride?" "I don't know anything about stars in the sky," the horse replied. "I'm here only to do the bidding of the little folk." "But I come from the little folk," she cried, "and they said to tell 4 feet to carry me to no feet at all." "4 feet? That's me," the horse whinnied. "Jump up and ride with me." They rode and they rode and they rode, till they rode out of the forest and found themselves at the edge of the sea. "I've brought you to the edge of the land, and that's as much as 4 feet can do," said the horse. "Now I must get home to my own folk." So the little girl slid down and walked along the sea, wondering what in the world she would do next, until suddenly the biggest fish she'd ever seen came swimming up to her feet. Good evening, she said to the fish. I'm trying to reach the stars in the sky. Can you help me? I'm afraid I can't, gurgled the fish. Unless, of course, you bring me word from the little folk. But I do, she cried. They said 4 feet would bring me to no feet at all, and then no feet at all would carry me to the stairs without steps. Ah, well, said the fish. That's all right, then. Get on my back and hold on tight. And off he went, kerplash, into the water, swimming along a silver path that glistened on the surface and seemed to stretch toward the end of the sea, where the water met the sky. There, in the distance, the little girl saw a beautiful rainbow rising out of the ocean and into the heavens, shining with all the colors in the world, blues and reds and greens, and wonderful to look at. The nearer they drew, the brighter it gleamed, until she had to shade her eyes from its light. At last they came to the foot of it, and she saw the rainbow was really a broad, bright road, sloping up and away into the sky, and at the far, far end of it, she could see wee shining things dancing about. I can go no further, said the fish. Here are the stairs without steps. Climb up if you can, but hold on tight. These stairs were never meant for little lassie's feet, you know. So the little girl jumped off Nofeet's back, and off he splashed through the water. She climbed and she climbed and she climbed up the rainbow. It wasn't easy, and even though she climbed until the sea was far below, the stars in the sky looked farther away than ever. But I won't give up, she told herself. I've come so far, I can't go back. Up and up she went. The air grew colder and colder, but the sky turned brighter and brighter, and finally she could tell she was nearing the stars. I'm almost there, she cried. And sure enough, suddenly she reached the very tip-top of the rainbow. Everywhere she looked, the stars were turning and dancing. They raced up and down and back and forth and spun in 1,000 colors around her. I'm finally here, she whispered to herself. She had never seen anything so beautiful before, and she stood gazing and wondering at the heavens. But after a while, she realized she was shivering with cold, and when she looked down into the darkness, she could no longer see the earth. She wondered where her own home was, so far away, but no street lamps or window lights marked the blackness below. She began to feel a little dizzy. I won't go until I touch one star, she told herself, and she stood on her toes and stretched her arms as high as she could. She reached further and further, and suddenly a shooting star zipped by and surprised her so much she lost her balance. Down she slid, down, down, down the rainbow. The further she slid, the warmer it grew, and the warmer it grew, the sleepier she felt. She gave a great yawn and a small sigh, and before she knew it, she was fast asleep. When she woke up, she found herself in her very own bed. The sun was peeking through her window, and the morning birds sang in the bushes and trees. Did I really touch the stars? She asked herself. Or was it only a dream? Then she felt something in her hand. When she opened her fist, a tiny light flashed in her palm, and at once was gone. And she smiled because she knew it was a speck of stardust.